What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about Wizards number six pick, Trey Johnson. I had Sam Stevens on my podcast yesterday to talk about Jahmyr Watkins, number 43 pick. So I'm kind of going in a weird order, starting at 43, going to six, and then I'll have someone else talk about Will Riley, the 21st pick, in a bit. Obviously, I've talked about Trey Johnson a lot the past couple of days since the draft. But I only know so much. I wasn't there covering Trey in person this season, so I felt that it was important to bring someone on to who really knows about Trey. So joining me today is sports beat reporter for Texas Horns 247, Eric Henry. Eric, thank you so much for joining me today.
Not a problem. Appreciate you having me on.
So I want to kind of start off the way I started my last one with kind of a lob, a bit of a softball question to kind of get into things. What are the Wizards getting in Trey Johnson? They're getting an on-ball guard or a combo guard. What's the best way to sort of use him offensively? What does Trey bring to the Wizards?
Wizards are getting in Trey Johnson as a guy, and this is going to sound like a cliche answer, Greg, but the Wizards are getting a guy who's a three-level scorer, right? Now, I would say the most clear defined of those levels is his range from outside and then, of course, in the mid-range. Trey will probably need to bulk up a little bit, get a little bit more adept, a little bit more comfortable finishing at the rim, even getting to the rim, and we can get into some of the things later on in this podcast as far as maybe Trey's lack of opportunities getting to the rim, but overall, just a very talented, polished scorer. Someone who you talk about. I mean, he was a five-star recruit coming out of Link Academy. Someone who, when told Cooper Flagg reclassified, was, arguably, depending on what service you use, the top or top two or three players in his class, right? So when he got to Texas, the thing with Trey is it was very clear, Greg, this was going to be his team. Okay, despite the fact that Rodney Terry, now former head coach Rodney Terry, brought in a lot of veterans, guys third year, fourth year, fifth year, of course, with the COVID years, it was very clear this was going to be Trey Johnson's team. So there were some growing pains in that respect in terms of, handing the keys to an 18-year-old guy who's learning how to lead or learning how to lead players who are 22, 23, 24 years old. But he did it. He was the SEC Freshman of the Year. He did lead the SEC in scoring with 19.9 points per game. Never had an issue getting his shot off, Greg. I mean, there were some lowlights, most notably the final regular season game in burnt orange and white when 0 of 14 shooting against Oklahoma. But there were plenty of highlights. There were many more highlights than there were lowlights. A guy who had 28 points in his first career game against Ohio State. Carry Texas, forgive that sound run in the background right there. He had, carry Texas with 39 points at Arkansas. I believe it was at Arkansas, if memory serves me correct, that overtime loss to the Razorbacks.
Yeah, 39, yeah.
Yep, there you go, right? So overall, just to answer your question, I won't belabor the point too long. Someone who is a very polished scorer will need to work on other areas of his game. But to your question, you say, is he a combo guard? Nah, Trey is a guy, even though he's 6'4". Very long wingspan, probably that, a little bit before your time, Greg, that traditional 90s two guard who would, get his 15, 18 shots up and give you 20, 25 a night.
So you mentioned the first game against Ohio State, 28 points. He followed that up, I believe, with 29 on 10 of 18 from three. So certainly a really strong showing. And I'm sure the expectation was high. You mentioned five-star, highly touted recruit coming into Texas, a big-time school in the SEC. And he comes in, he starts to dominate early on. What was your first impression of Trey? Certainly in the early seasons with the practices and stuff, but coming into those games and from the start, showcasing his ability to score.
Great. You asked me my first impression, really, before we even get to the start of the regular season, going back to camp, an intense competitor, someone who Trey does everything seriously. I think that's one of the things, I spoke with, I'm forgetting the radio station, I want to say it's 106.7, the Fan in DC, if memory serves me correct, right after Trey was drafted. Excuse me. And I was some things emphasizing just an intense competitor. One of the things that stood out to me is, as I mentioned, Rodney Terry turned the keys over to him, said, this is your team. But he's a guy who they had to hold back from overtraining because he actually had a bit of a groin injury going into the regular season. The only games he missed this year were because that groin injury, Rodney Terry held him out a little bit in the towards the end of non-conference play because that groin started to flare up. But that's because they couldn't get him out of the gym. They couldn't get him to stop, work it out, right? So a very intense competitor. When you talk with him, I'll give you this funny story, Greg. I did post game at LSU. It was one of the few road games that, Texas's sports communications department, shout out to Scott McConnell, one of the best in the business, didn't know that I was going to be making that trip. So I only say that is to say he didn't have a necessarily a post game setup ready to go, right? So when it came time for post game, outside of Rodney Terry, as far as getting players, this game at LSU, which Texas won easily, Scott didn't, have anything lined up. He's like, hey, I didn't know you were coming. I'm gonna need you to kind of, the guys know who you are, just grab them as they're heading to the bus. And I grabbed Jordan Pope and grabbed Arthur Kaluma, and Tremont Mark. You grab Trey Johnson, and Trey, all smiles after a win, grabbing his food, ready to hit the bus. And I'm like, hey, Trey, did Scott talk to you? He's like, nah. I'm like, all right, you got a couple things for interview. His face goes from the smiley, guy you saw on draft night to the laser-focused, intense Trey, right? I'm telling you that to say anything related to basketball, he does seriously. And I think that's something that, for Washington, a franchise that, hasn't won 50 games well before even I was alive, right? It's been what, 1977, I believe, 77, 78 is the last time
50 years, something like that, yeah.
they won 50 games. And especially a team that's trying to have, a bit of a culture overhaul with CJ McCollum and Chris Middleton and others, right? Like, it's that type of guy that you need who is, it just lives and dies on winning, right? It sounds so cliche, but Trey would just as easily take 9 points in a game if his team wins, as opposed to scoring 30 in a loss. And that, when you ask in terms of first impressions, that was really, it wasn't Ohio State or scoring 29 against Houston Christian. It was this guy's laser focus, gym rat, wants to hoop, all about business.
It's certainly refreshing to hear that, especially for a team like Washington, because they're trying to rebuild the culture there. And certainly it sounds like a guy like Trey, who only cares about his craft. I mean, he said in his presser at the combine that he doesn't, apart from playing basketball, like he talks to his friends, he reads books. He was talking about the new book he was reading, and he listens to music. Like that's all he does. Which is refreshing, especially in the NBA today, because everything's guaranteed. So you have a lot of guys that come into the league, they're automatically getting millions and millions of dollars. And so you don't necessarily see the ones like Trey that are just laser focused on how can I improve my craft? Like, how can I do this? And the fact that you mentioned that he's in the gym like all the time is quite impressive to me, obviously, to see someone that young. And even before the season, what he was 18 coming in, and he's already putting in the work. So that's definitely intriguing, and it paid off. Obviously, you said he led the SEC in scoring as a freshman. Obviously, there was that 39-point game against Arkansas, which you mentioned earlier. I feel like that put him on the map to maybe some guys or some people that weren't too tuned in to the end of the season. I had watched some Trey before, but that was certainly the game where I was kind of like, okay, this guy is a top 10 easily, top 10 pick if he declares this year. Just the shot making was just absurd in that game. I mean, 7-11 from three. And towards the end, right, it was a really close game by the end. Arkansas knew where the ball was going. It's the same thing. I'm reading a book right now about MJ, and a lot of the quotes are just like, I'm getting the ball, but what are you going to do about it? And they tried as hard as they could to stop him, and he just kept getting to his spots. He kept making tough shots. What did you see in that game where you were like, okay, this kid is different?
Wish I could say that was the game that we knew was different, but in specificity to your question, what about that game? He seemed to be the only person who wanted it, and actually, I my memory serves me correct. Arthur Kaluma did play that game, so let me kind of give the answer this way, and I'm not trying to denigrate any other players on Texas's roster. As I mentioned, Rodney Terry brought in a lot of transfers. I maybe I shouldn't say Trey was the only person who wanted it. But the roster was a unique fit, Greg, and that is what I think, in all honesty. It kind of gives Trey a bit of a leg up in terms of his NBA preparation. So Texas reshuffled the roster. They brought in, I used to remember the number off the top of my head. I want to say it was eight new transfers. It was Arthur Kaluma from Kansas State, Julian Larry and Jason Kent from Indiana State. It was Jordan Pope from Oregon State. It was There are a few more that I'm missing off the top of my head, but the point is the roster was really reconstructed, right? And to be completely transparent with you, it was a poorly constructed roster. You know, guys, Jordan Pope from Oregon State, he's a volume scorer, right? He's a guy who's used to having the ball in his hands. That's why, you know, he was the Oregon State's leading scorer the past 2 years. He comes to Texas, they're asking him to be maybe the third option, maybe be a catch and shoot guy. Jordan never really got comfortable with that. You talk about Julian Lary, used to being a starting point guard for an Indiana State team 2 years ago that just missed out in the NCAA tournament. Of course, you may remember they had the four guys, you know, they make the NIT run, so on and so forth. They asked him to be a backup. He couldn't do more with less. You know, his minutes were cut in half. He couldn't really be as effective. Jason Kent, a guy who was at, oh my gosh, it wasn't Creighton. I'm forgetting the school he was at prior to Indiana State. Nevertheless, had less minutes, wasn't able to do less with more, right? Arthur Kaluma was the only guy from Kansas State who was a glue guy at Creighton his first 2 years, goes to Kansas State, again, is not meant to be the first scoring option. So he had the easiest adjustment coming in and being like, hey, we just need you to be a vet. Go rebound. He was an undersized four. I'm only saying all this to build up to the answer with Arkansas that there were times, a lot of times throughout the year, where outside of Arthur Kaluma, and maybe it was because he had the most confidence in his role, he's the only one who looked like, all right, I'm willing to bust my chin, dive for loose balls, do whatever it takes outside of Trey. So to bring it back to the Arkansas game, like you said, John Calipari knew where the ball was going. Boogie Flan and those guys, and they all, Jonas Adu and others, they all knew where the ball was going. Just couldn't stop them, right? It just seemed throughout that game like Trey was the only one. You know, there's kind of a, you know, I'm sure you'll remember, Greg, the Jimmy Butler meme at the end of the COVID bubble, right, where he's
Where
worn
he's been
out.
down, yeah.
Trey kind of has his own where he's at the Arkansas's at the free throw line, and he's just tugging at his shorts like. I'm doing everything I can to keep Texas in this game. That's what I remember most about that more than anything else, is that Trey was the only one who could make a shot, the only one who could get his shot off. The only other guys were trying to do their best. So maybe I shouldn't have led with the only one who wanted it, but seemingly the only one who could put the ball in the hoop. And yet it wasn't good enough. And I remember Texas being down, you know, even late in that game in regulation, 6, 7 points, Trey managing to bring him back. Down in overtime, Trey managed to bring him back, and it wasn't enough. Memory serves me correct, you may have it pulled up. That was an 86-81 game, I believe. And Trey literally had them within 4 or 5 points each time, and then eventually just ran out of gas.
It's fascinating because I watched that game in full. I don't know, I just got lucky that I got to watch that. But there was the most memorable play from that game was I believe Texas was down 4 or 5 and it was in overtime, so the game was close to being over. And they were double teaming him on the wing, on the wing close to their bench, and he just like pulls it back and drains a three over two guys. I don't know if it was for 0.37 or 39, but the ability to continue that, I'm sure he was exhausted. And even to start overtime, somehow, some way you get there, and he makes the first shot, he drains a three. And you're just like, how is he still going? And that's kind of what spoke to me is, okay, this kid's special. You probably saw it early on. There was probably a different moment based on your answer. What was that moment where you were like, okay, he has the 5 stars, there's all this hype. But this is what I'm seeing. Okay, this kid's going to be special.
Let's say Ohio State, honestly, that season opener to go out and get 28 points, you know, because we had heard, Greg, you know, to give you a little background, the year prior, Rodney Terry missed out in Texas basketball, based on their 5-star recruit, Ron Holland, who wanted, opted to go to the G League late, right? So a lot of the building to the season, a lot of the anticipation to the season was, well, Texas, they made it to the second round of the NCAA tournament. Maybe they could have been better had they had Ron Holland. Had they had the roster that they thought they would have had, well, they could have been a Sweet 16 or so on and so forth. So leading into this year, it was, well, they got our guy. And RT said, Trey's locked in. Trey's locked in. And I guess to give your audience a bit of background, Rodney Terry coached Trey Johnson's father, Richard Johnson II. Trey is Richard III. He goes by Trey for being the third, but coached Richard Johnson Jr. at Baylor. So he's known Trey Johnson for, you know, time he's a kid, right? So all we heard through the offseason is Trey's locked in. Trey's locked in. He's coming to Texas. He's going to be the man. He's the 5-star recruit. And it's like, okay, we've been talking about it. You've told us about it. Can he be that, right? The hype. I remember going to SEC Media Days and the conversation of this guy can be the greatest Texas freshman since Kevin Durant. Well, again, Greg, maybe a little before your time, but Kevin Durant was a guy who scored 20 points. If memory serves me correct, KD played in 36 games at Texas, scored 20 points in like 31 of them. Okay. So when you say he can be the greatest scorer, the true freshman is Kevin Durant, that's saying something. Rodney Terry was an assistant under Rick Barnes that year that KD, DJ Augustin, and others were at Texas, right? So I'm just giving you all that background is to say, hey, you have built up and hyped up Trey Johnson to this point. Can he be that? For him to go out and get 28 the way he did against Ohio State in Las Vegas in that classic, that had us sold. And all the non-conference stuff, we knew Trey'd be able to score. I think there was a question of, okay, you kind of run it back. Can he do it in SEC play? The answer was yes, all the way through. There were some brief moments where it felt like he didn't know if maybe that was a byproduct of Trey learning how to lead, that he wasn't getting his shot off. He was trying to defer to other guys when it was like, no, Trey, like we've already reached a point in the year in which we understand, no disrespect to those other guys, their fit on this roster, it's not working. You're gonna have to, you're the guy who scored 39 at Arkansas, you're gonna have to be that guy every night, right? But to answer your question, yeah, Ohio State opening night, that's when we knew.
I mean, yeah, certainly it's rare when you see these five-star prospects because there is so much hype, and a lot of the time it's so much is on their shoulders, right? Is that five-star to sort of lead a program? All those expectations that you said being compared to a guy like KD, a Texas basketball legend, and to go out and live up to that hype of, I'm gonna go out here and average nearly 20 points per game in my first year, lead the SEC. Obviously, Texas was good. It translated to wins as well. So it's certainly fascinating, and it's an interesting case study into how he'll deal with the expectations in Washington. Certainly probably less of a role, and obviously when guys in college go to the NBA, he's not going to have to be asked to score and take all of those shots, especially early on in his career. He's not going to have to be the number one option for the Wizards this year, maybe not even next year. But that kind of is a nice segue into the next part, because we talked all about Trey in college. Certainly it's the Wizards podcast, so I want to talk about a little bit of his role and how he would fit on the team. His role at Texas, it's okay, I'm the number one guy. I got to go out and take a decent amount of shots, and I got to go score when the game's close. The ball is probably going to be in my hands. It's going to look a bit different, especially to begin his NBA career. What do you envision that role being for Trey in the beginning of his career, and eventually if he reaches his pinnacle, his peak? What do you view him as in the NBA?
To start with, what do I see his role early on? Like you mentioned, you have other guys, a CJ McCollum, for example, someone who's been, a bucket 20 points a night for his entire career, right? So you think Trey probably might not be the number one or even number two option, as you said. I think that's going to give Trey the opportunity to round out some of the aspects of his game that he needs to. As I talked about in the opening, I'll talk about him scoring at the rim. It wasn't necessarily a inability to, it was, well, as I've said, Trey was only scoring option, right? So teams kind of took his ability to dribble and get to the rim in that sense. Trey had no issues getting to the free throw line, got to the line a lot, right? So again, it's not like he can't get to the bucket, but a lot of times he'd get fouled on pull-ups and things of that nature. So I think, A, it'll give an opportunity to really, get in the weight room. Another funny anecdote with Trey is, when he arrived, he probably, if I had to guess, was around 175 pounds, 180 pounds. I believe Trey's listed weight at UT was 185, 190, somewhere around there. Let's split it the difference, and let's say Trey was around 185, right? But he did put on some weight by the time he got to campus versus leaving. So we asked Trey, like, man, what have you done to bulk up? And he's like, hey, I'm hitting the weights. And we're like, all right, how you doing that, so on and so forth. And I just happened to ask Trey, like, hey, how much you benching? And he's like, oh, no, I don't do that. I don't get underneath that bench. That's gonna mess up my shot. I would suggest to Trey that at the next level, he will want to include the bench press as part of his workout regimen, right? So I think, I say that jokingly, but it's a lead into me saying I think it'll give him an opportunity to bulk up in the weight room. I think Trey being 6'4", especially someone whose game isn't predicated on speed per se, right? It's not saying Trey is an athletic, but the best way I could describe his athleticism to my eye, and listen, I am no scout, I am no expert, but to my eye, I would say he's athletic enough. meaning athletic enough at the collegiate level, athletic enough at the NBA level to where he's not going to be a liability, but he is no Anthony Edwards. His game is not predicated on being the best athlete out there on the court, right? So I'm saying that to say, even if Trey bulks up and plays at 6'4" and change, a buck 95 or 200 pounds, it's not like that's going to slow him down because his game isn't necessarily predicated on beating off the first step with the dribble or athleticism per se. Defensively, Trey has all of the makings of a great defender, and at times Trey was a good enough defender. However, it wasn't always there, right? Part of it in Trey's defense more than likely was how much of the load he was carrying on the offensive end. You just can't be that guy on both ends, right? Rodney Terry is someone who preaches. I can hear the quote right now. I want my guys to, get our butts down and defend. Okay. It's a lot of energy exhausted on the defensive end to then go out there and be the number one and, quite frankly, number two option offensively. So some of it probably was because of the fact that how much of the load he was carrying offensively. He couldn't do that defensively. But like I said, long wingspan has all of the makings of a lockdown defender. I think it will give him an opportunity with him not having to be the number one or number two option in Washington to round himself out defensively. Again, I'm not saying he's Luka Doncic. He wasn't a turnstile, but there were times where it's like, all right, Trey, like we need a little bit more defensively. I think this will give him the opportunity to do that. So in terms of his role, I think he'll be able to do the things he does well. Shoot off the bounce, shoot off the dribble, catch and shoot, et cetera, while also rounding out different aspects of his game.
I'm glad you mentioned the defense because a lot of the pre-draft process, Trey all along was my number three prospect behind Flagg and behind Harper. And obviously a lot of people, when I posted my big board, the main thing I got was, his defense is atrocious. He's a liability on that. And I was like, please just watch the games. Like he's not that bad. And when you consider, I'm glad you mentioned his role too, he has to do so much on the offensive end. And I'm sure when Luka Doncic is engaged on defense, he's not the worst defender ever. But again, he's asked to do so much on offense, which makes it a little difficult. So I like to tell people, you got to envision what he will be in the NBA. And I certainly think in a better role, not having to have the entire offensive burden pretty much on his back a lot of the time, he will have the ability to do that. And a lot of it in the NBA, I feel like in terms of defense, is effort and IQ. Like, if Trey was a 6'3" Jeremiah Fears, I could understand, okay, maybe he's a good defender, but they're still going to post him up. Like I remember Zakai Ziegler at Tennessee is always a good, pesky defender, but in the league, that doesn't matter because he's just too small. Trey is, has the height, he has the size, he has enough athleticism, as you mentioned, to where I'm not too concerned about him ever realistically being a liability on defense. And like you mentioned, I'm sure he probably did take a few possessions off because he was so exhausted from offense. And the quote that Will Dawkins said, after the draft, when they took him was, I got on him for that in the pre-draft process. Trey said that Will told him multiple times, like, hey, you took this play off. And we noticed that you are taking a couple possessions off here on offense and some on defense. And so I think, what you said perfectly encapsulates the defensive side. Like, is he a great defender? No. Is he a liability? No. And I think if he doesn't have to score all those points and take all those shots, that the defense will be okay. He has enough athleticism to do that. Did you ever view him as a liability? At Texas, did you ever see any instances where like teams were like going at him on a pretty consistent basis?
I want to be very specific with how I answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Greg, there were times where it was like, okay, they are going at Trey. But you can't look at the teams going at him and not take into account everything you and I just talked about for the last 6 minutes, which is how much of the load he was carrying offensively. Again, two things can be true. All right. We kind of live in this hot takey world, where like, hey, it has to be this or has to be that. Two things can be true. Yes, there were times, even in some bigger games, against bigger opponents, right? Like you talked about, I agree with you. You mentioned Zakai Ziegler, because that was an example of sometimes it'd be like, having covered the SEC, it'd be like, I know Zakai is pesky, and I've seen it firsthand. Texas lost to Tennessee 2 years ago, before when Trey's senior year, right? But he's also 5'7". Like, what are we doing here? But that aside, this isn't the Bash the Guy Ziegler podcast. Two things could be true. Teams did go at Trey, but also you have to take into account, you can't ignore, A, how much he was asked to do offensively, and B, the makeup of the roster around him. Hell, there'd be times where I'd be demoralized. Like, what else can I do? You know, there were times covering the team when it just felt like it's Trey and a bunch of guys. And like I said, I spotlighted Arthur Kaluma, who signed an Exhibit 10 deal with the Lakers, and Art was a joy to cover. I hope he makes the roster somehow. From a fit perspective, it was just such an ill-fitting roster. I'm not saying that any of those things should play a factor, right? In the NBA, you're getting big boy money. Trey, quite frankly, was a highly compensated college player. He was getting big boy money. They expect you to perform, right? So I'm not saying that those things allow you to be like, all right, well, you know, I'm not going to do this. But that never outweighs all the things that I led with in talking about someone who loves hoop, is passionate about hoop, and I have no reason to believe he won't grow out of these things as a 25, 26-year-old, as opposed to an 18-year-old who's been saddled with trying to lead his home state program, trying to play for a coach who his father played for, right? In addition to the NIL, the ill-fitting roster, the expectations at Texas, right? That's I've just named six things, and those were all placed on the shoulders of an 18-year-old. I think with Washington having a good vet like CJ McCollum, a good vet like Chris Middleton, he will be fine.
We talked about the defensive concerns. Obviously, that was, I would say, the biggest downside. And for me, when I was evaluating him, that being the biggest glaring issue, when I didn't think it was the biggest issue, that certainly kind of, showed me that he's okay. They can't really say much about his offensive game. And obviously, the rim pressure was sort of the downside. You talked about that as well. Teams gearing up to stop him, it's going to make it pretty difficult. I'm sure he's exhausted too. It's just easier to sit and shoot the ball in the second half instead of getting downhill when you're probably very tired. So all of these things considered, I think the glaring part that I've taken from a lot of your perspective is you have to consider role. You have to consider all that he was asked to do, the roster around him. And certainly on a team like the Wizards, I think he'll be able to more soundly develop into the type of player. And I think playing behind CJ McCollum will be great for him. CJ's been a great scorer in the league for years. Chris Middleton certainly as well as another vet that I think he could learn from too. What would you say is his best trait? Like if you're talking to Wizards fans, you're like, all right, like get excited to watch Trey do this. I would assume it's an offensive trait, but like what is that one thing?
We've talked about his love of basketball. We've talked about his shooting ability. When Trey is hot, it is there's you know very few things more entertaining, I would assume, as a basketball fan than watching a guy who can fill it up in a hurry and can shoot it. It's one of the things that makes Steph Curry, right? One of the what has made him one of the most entertaining players for the last decade and a half, right? Is that when that guy gets hot, he can put together 12, 15, 18 points in like a 3-minute stretch, and you're, you know, the opposing team's calling timeout, and you know, Steph's doing his, you know, his little shimmy, right? Like Trey, again, I'm not saying he's a Steph Curry level shooter, but he has the capability. He can shoot from anywhere on the court. That to me, what if you were saying if I were a Wizards fan, what would I look forward to? A guy who, when he is hot and when he is feeling it, again, go back, watch that Arkansas game. That's entertaining basketball. That's the type of thing that would make me, if I were living in the DC, you know, Maryland, Virginia area, go buy a ticket.
Yeah, I mean that was when I've mentioned this multiple times. I just can't get over how tough the shots were in that game. It was just so impressive to me to see a guy that was 18 years old carrying that team on the road in the SEC. I've heard Arkansas is a really I've never been, but I heard Arkansas is a really tough place to play. They certainly made it far in the tournament, so all the more impressive to see that. We're kind of starting to wrap up here, and I appreciate you again for all that you've shared, Eric. Final thing, I like player comp sometimes. I like it when it's reasonable. And for Jameer Watkins, we talked about how some have related him to Lu Dort based on his size and his defensive acumen. I just couldn't help but get over when I watched Trey Johnson play, seeing Bradley Beal, and maybe that's because I watched him in Washington for 10 years and I watched a lot of Trey Johnson. Is that a comp? Just his ability to score without the ball in his hands. Like he doesn't have to create for himself. He can play off ball. And I think that's one of the things I love so much about Beal. when he was playing alongside Wall, like he didn't need to bring the ball up. He didn't need a screen. He could just play off ball, off down screens and get to his spots. Is that a comp that makes sense? And if not, it's okay. What would a better comp be in your mind?
I smiled when you mentioned comp only because that was one of the biggest debates amongst the Texas media is like, who is Trey Johnson the next level? We asked Danny Hurley that question, the Dan Hurley, UConn head coach. He said Jamal Crawford. I didn't necessarily see that one, but he was kind of asked on the spot in a post game. My comp, or actually, you know what? Let me address yours first before I can do my comp. I can see Brad Beal. I think Brad Beal's a little more dynamic than Trey is, but I can see Brad Beal. I don't think that's, especially when you talk about someone who doesn't need the ball in his hands, right? Because the first 75% of Texas's season, they tried as they might, to find a point guard, to find someone who could initiate the offense. And then finally was like, you know what? This ain't working, Trey. Here's another responsibility. Initiate the offense. And when I say initiate, I don't mean he was playing point. He wasn't, averaging eight assists, but the offense was literally running through Trey. He was initiating, and then he'd, get the ball back and do whatever. So I can see Brad Beal. The comp for me is, again, this one may be a little dated, but Michael Redd. Remember former Milwaukee Buck Michael Redd?
He was good. Way better than people give him credit for, I think.
Way better than people give him credit for. The only difference is Michael Redd was a lefty. And of course, being a lefty, that adds a different little dynamic to your game. But Michael Redd was a guy who you knew could shoot mid 40s, maybe near high 40s from the field, was going to shoot a lot of that on jump shots, could shoot, mid 30s, high 30s from 3 point, maybe even 40% from 3 point range, solid from the free throw line. Again, not in, he's not going to make an all defensive team, but he was never truly a liability on defense, right? Michael Redd is my comp. And now that Michael Redd's on X now, doing some stuff, I might need to just shoot my shot and be like, hey, how do you feel about Trey Johnson as your comp, right? So I can feel vindicated about that comp. But I could see Brad Beal, but my personal comp is Michael Redd.
I like that. We don't I Michael Redd, I feel like, isn't talked about like at all, really, in terms of NBA dialogue, and he should be, because he was very good during his time. I like that comp. I'm glad you agree, at least to a certain extent, with the Beal. It's so hard with player comps. Like, I feel like you either like it or you're just like I don't think you should be comparing this guy to this guy. But I can certainly get behind the Michael Redd comp as well. If he turns it out to be anything like Michael Redd, I think Wizards fans would be pretty happy with the pick as well. But that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Thank you so much for joining me to break down Trey Johnson. Where can the people listening find you, Eric?
Thank you. I appreciate that. My boss would be a little disappointed if I didn't get a chance to do this plug right here. You can find me on X or Twitter at Eric C. Henry underscore. You can find my Texas football, basketball, and maybe baseball, depending on where we are, at horns247.com, horns247 on all social media, and 247sports.com.
I would recommend it, because as someone who like started watching Trey Johnson, like I mentioned, in real, like after that Arkansas game, I read a lot of the stuff on 247, and like that kind of got me in the know of, okay, like this is what Trey's doing in media. This is what Trey's doing off the court, but also on the court, some of those anecdotes. So highly recommend it. But again, thank you so much, Eric, for joining me today. That's gonna wrap it up for this episode. Thanks for listening, guys.